Hi, you're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. I'm Justine Toe. Going Clear, Scientology and the Prison of Belief is the new documentary directed by Alex Gibney on the faith of Tom Cruise, John Travolta and other Hollywood luminaries, Scientology. It's a two-hour-long expose of the religion, what it believes, the particular demands that it makes upon its members, and also the lengths that it goes to punish whistleblowers who have exited the religion. Now, for an outsider, the kinds of beliefs that Scientologists hold are particularly confronting. But if that's true of Scientology, is that also the case for other religions, like Christianity? We'll be thinking about this on Life and Faith. Is faith believable? Can religious faith be credible and reasonable? In the second half of the program, we'll be joined by CPX fellow Richard Schumach, who was recently in Melbourne debating this very topic with atheist Peter Boghossian. But first, Scientology.
Someone had told me there's this cult, and they'll make anything possible in your life.
I was deeply convinced that we were going to save the world.
It was a transcendent experience.
You feel euphoric.
Everything you do for endless trillions of years depends on what you do with and in Scientology.
They sell it all in the beginning as something quite logical.
You take on a matrix of thought that is not your own.
It's so strong that it sticks you like
very
glue.
Controllable, very suggestible.
You just don't see it happening to you. You justify so much.
There is no logical explanation other than faith.
Do you ever think, Mr. Hubbard, that you might be quite mad?
Oh, yes. The one man in the world who never believes he's mad is a madman.
That was the trailer from Going Clear, Scientology and the Prison of Belief. So the film consists of extensive interviews with former members of Scientology, and not just lay people, but those who ascended within its ranks to reach the inner circle of the organisation. And these former members are talking about their experiences on the inside and the beliefs that Scientologists sign up to. And some of the details sound, well, bizarre, I guess is the way to put it. Now, Natasha Moore's in the studio with us, and you've seen the film, and the way that you've described it to me was that your jaw was dropped for the entire 2 hours. Was that because of the experiences of these former members or the beliefs or both?
All of the above. Like, it was just one revelation after another. I mean, I kind of expected it to be interesting, and, you know, you hear things about Scientology and how wacky a lot of the stuff related to it is, but I was just blown away. So it's kind of built on these interviews from former members, and those are very eye-opening. But there's also a lot of biography of L. Ron Hubbard, who was the founder of Scientology, even interview footage with him, footage from Scientology conferences, a lot from, you know, the 80s and the 90s, which are kind of spectacular. It even includes at one point a music video, a Scientology music video,
right.
Which that alone is reason to go and see the film. Like, it was amazing.
So give us a sense of the kinds of beliefs that Scientologists hold. Like, what do they believe about the nature of the world, who we are as humans, all that sort of stuff?
It's kind of hard to say. After 2 hours, I'm still not very sure what they believe. And actually, one of the interviewees made this point. He talked about how, you know, if you go to a synagogue or a mosque or to a Christian church and ask people, you know, just ordinary adherents of a faith, what they believe, they can kind of sum it up for you pretty quickly. But he said that, you know, it wasn't until he'd been a Scientologist for years that he kind of found out what it was all about. So it seems like at the just entry level, it's kind of more or less a talking cure. They have this thing called auditing where they get you to talk about kind of everything, traumas from your childhood, traumas in theory from past lives as well. And then you go up level by level, and infamously you have to pay money at each stage,
right,
to graduate. And then eventually you get to this level called Operating Thetan 3, where they unlock the briefcase, literally.
There's an actual briefcase.
There's an actual locked briefcase with handwritten by L. Ron Hubbard himself. He wrote down the kind of creation myth of Scientology. And once you get to this level, you find out all about it. And it's kind of this very strange story of this overlord called Xenu, who was around 75 million years ago. This is a character who showed up in L. Ron Hubbard's. He was a science fiction writer earlier in his life. And all this stuff to do with cryogenics and overpopulation and volcanoes. And I didn't really understand it, but, you know, the interviewee who describes this whole experience with the locked briefcase and everything kind of said that at this point he'd been in Scientology for years and got to understand this and was like, what is this?
Because it sounds like science fiction.
Yes, and obviously had a lot of its roots in science fiction.
Now, you've written that the film has given you a new perspective on how crazy and implausible religious faith can look to people from the outside looking in.
I'm very well aware that at all the points in this movie where I want to say, oh, that's just crazy, people have that reaction to my faith. You know, every time I write something about Christianity in a mainstream news outlet, people write comments about how, you know, it's
the flying spaghetti monster.
Yeah, like believing in centaurs or vampires, that anything supernatural looks as crazy. And there are aspects of Christianity that maybe a guy being crucified and raised from the dead maybe doesn't sound that crazy to us because we've had 2,000 years of our culture accepting it. But it did sound quite crazy to people in the first century. So I think trying to get my head around that attitude of why religious faith and religious claims in general can look quite unreasonable to people.
So does that give you reason to doubt your own beliefs as a Christian then? That's the obvious follow-up.
Well, I think it gave me more sympathy for that ultra-rationalist point of view.
The whole thing of you need hard evidence and how crazy to believe.
Yeah, and that it's easier to just dismiss any kind of claim about something that you can't see and prove.
Yeah,
and,
so the supernatural,
you know, have
is
empirical evidence for. Yeah. On the other hand, no, it didn't really challenge my faith. It kind of secured me in a faith that isn't all about making money and controlling people, which is really the picture you get of Scientology in the film.
And it's also the character of the key people involved, right? You've got L. Ron Hubbard, and then you've got Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and I think it comes back to that for me especially, because with all the abuses that are detailed in the movie, like it'd be very easy to point to similar abuses in Christian history, Christian kind of spin-off cults and that kind of thing. But if you go back to the comparison of L. Ron Hubbard, who founded Scientology, and Jesus, who founded Christianity, there's just no competition. Hubbard, he actually is quoted as saying, the only way to make any real money is to have a religion. You know, this is the guy who then later made up a religion and fought for a tax exemption for Scientology.
And that charges you money to progress to.
Yeah, that's right. And that couldn't be more different from Jesus, who also told people to give up money, but to give it to the poor, and who valued and cared for the outcast and the marginalized and dispossessed instead of kind of chasing the celebrities. You know, I think you watch something like this, the Scientology documentary, and to contrast that to a gospel and read about the character of Jesus and just how genuine and authentic he is. Like, there's just no competition between those.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Life and Faith. We've been talking about the new documentary about Scientology, Going Clear, Scientology and the Prison of Belief. We're now joined by Richard Schumack. He specialises in the philosophy of religion, and we're really glad to see that he's on the team at CPX. Now, Richard, thanks for being on the show.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You recently took part in a public event with Peter Boghossian, who's an American philosopher and an atheist evangelist, for want of a better word. The event was How Do You Know? And jointly organised by the Melbourne City Bible Forum and the Rational Society of Australia.
We want to decrease the number of false beliefs we have, and we want to increase the number of true beliefs that we have. To do this, we cannot use processes that are unreliable. Processes that take one away from reality are not based on evidence. I term such ostensibly benign superstitious beliefs gateway beliefs. The Easter Bunny is an example of a conclusion for which certain epistemic agents, certain people, think that there's sufficient evidence. In a paper currently under peer review, I argue that starting out with seemingly inconsequential beliefs for which one lacks sufficient evidence may lay the framework for one to cognitively habituate oneself to lending one's belief to other propositions or other things which one also thinks that there's sufficient evidence when no such evidence exists. Now we have finally set the groundwork to talk about faith. What is faith? Well, faith is belief without evidence.
In this event, Peter Boghossian was claiming that religious faith is by nature reliant on unreasonable claims to knowledge. If that's the case, what knowledge test would faith have to pass in order for him to regard it as reasonable?
That's a very interesting question for Peter. He was asked that. He was asked what evidence would believers need to provide for him that Jesus was real or that God was real. And he said there was no evidence even if Jesus appeared before him and spoke to him, he would more likely think that that was a delusion, that he was going crazy, than that was really happening. And so he said he didn't know that there was any evidence you could present to him.
Not even scientific evidence? Because that's what he's counting as the grounds of reasonable knowledge.
Right.
Well, that raises more questions than it asks, doesn't it? Okay, well, let's go to the next one. What issues do you then see with Peter's arguments?
The problem that Peter has, as you say, he's very interested in evidence, but only a very narrow type of evidence. He thinks the only evidence that counts is scientific evidence, evidence that you can repeatedly and objectively observe and then reason from. That's his way of thinking. The problem with that is there are just so many things that we know about that we don't get with reasoning from objective evidence.
And what are some of those things?
Oh, well, we know about the past. So I know my family history, not because I have any objective evidence for it, but just because people tell me what happened. There might be a few artifacts. We might find old buildings or ruins. But for the most part, the events of history, we only know about them because someone just tells us about them. We can't go back and do it again. Knowledge of persons, knowledge of our experiences. These are all things that we can't have objective evidence for. These are just subjective things.
And I guess the claim that Peter Boghossian is making is that the only thing that would count as true is something that can be scientifically tested in a lab. But, you know, we don't live our lives like that, right?
No, and we don't and we can't. But, yeah, presumably he would think if you could catch God, stick him in a lab, put some probes into him and repeatedly prove that he exists, then maybe that counts. But that's the only way that you could do it.
So this resonates with me quite a bit from having seen the Scientology documentary, that I was watching that and thinking, you know, I can see why a lot of people look at any supernatural belief, any kind of faith, and go, it's just people trying to believe something that's obviously impossible. And maybe that faith is, you know, the more impressive, the more unlikely the thing it is that you believe. What do you think are some good ways of distinguishing between faith that is reasonable and faith that is unreasonable?
Well, I think with any belief, whether it's about God or anything, it's a reasonable belief if there's evidence for it of some sort and if the way you arrived at that belief was a sensible way and if it survives competition.
What do you mean survives competition?
Well, so if you believe something, someone comes along and believes something totally different. So you run into a Scientologist and you say, I'm a Christian, they're a Scientologist. If you compare these beliefs between Scientology and Christianity and see which are the most reasonable beliefs, which conform to the evidence better.
So can you just quickly walk us through then in what ways the Christian faith satisfies different kinds of evidence, if not the scientific way of knowing?
Sure. Christian faith seems to me is reasonable because you can have good philosophical arguments for why God is real. So it makes logical sense. It also makes historical sense. It makes the most sense of the events, particularly the events of Jesus, but a whole range of different events that the Bible talks about. It also makes personal sense. It appeals to our intuitions about love and about grace and about beauty.
That these things are real, do you mean?
That these things are real, and also that it makes sense that if these things are real and important to us, then there's a reason for that, and that's because our universe, it's built into the universe by a creator. It's plausible because it works and it makes sense of our lives as well.
So as a religious philosopher, you feel like you can confidently say that having Christian faith is a reasonable thing to do?
Yeah, it's reasonable, it's plausible, it's sensible, absolutely.
So is faith ever believable? The beliefs of Scientology may sound a bit out there, but then so do the claims of any other faith. But scientific ways of knowing are not the only path to reasonable knowledge, and Richard's taken us through some of those today. And if you're interested in finding out more about this topic, then a good place to start is John Lennox's God's Undertaker, Has Science Buried God?
Next week on Life and Faith, we'll be bringing you an interview with legendary Fairfax journalist Ross Gittins.
We are really a very rich country. We're a very fortunate country. We've done surprisingly well in the rough times before and after the global financial crisis. And yet we tell ourselves that we couldn't possibly spare any money for all those poor people overseas. It's really just pure selfishness that says a rich country like ours can't afford to help poor people in other countries.
That's next week on Life and Faith. Thanks for your company.